To all the ladies in the place with under some pressure, hit and step by Gilbert Brown. Who rock grooves and make moves with all the mommies? The back.
The old Gravedigger.
The back of the club, Mackin' Hall, my crew's behind me.
I mean, this guy was 345 pounds, and when you have a nickname like the Gravedigger, you're God.
And now, presented by Stadium View Bar, Grill, and Banquet Hall in beautiful Green Bay, Wisconsin, the Packer Report Podcast with Gilbert Brown. Here's your host, publisher of the Packer Report, Ross Uglum.
Believe me, sweetie, I got enough to feed the need. No need to be greedy. I got mad friends with Benz that see notes by the layers.
What's up, Green Bay Packers fans? Getting this to you on a Victory Monday. Green Bay Packers knocked out the Detroit Lions after an epic comeback, which maybe wasn't necessary, but certainly the flavor of the day on Sunday by a final score of 23-20. Gilbert, just about had to turn that one off, huh?
Man, I was contemplating on it, but I got to run and take my flag down. But, you know, you got to believe in your team, man. You got to believe in your team, and you got to believe in they was going to turn it out. And you kind of felt like they was going to go in, fix some things second half, and come out and shut them Lions up, and that's what they did.
So my Lambeau Field seat neighbor, the guy I sit next to in the press box, Matt Schneidman, he had a – unbelievable statistic from this season related to the Lions. The Packers led the Lions for 0 seconds this season and were 2-0. At no point were they winning either game.
Wow.
Until the field goals went through the uprights and the clock read zero.
Interesting statistic, my man. Interesting.
Anyway, as far as the news is concerned, not a ton going on in Green Bay, obviously. The Packers won, means they don't have to play next weekend. And then Seattle literally falls an inch short of sending Green Bay to the number one overall seed. The third down play looked like obvious pass interference. No booth review on that. And, you know, I think you can kind of talk that to death. I guess I would say if you're going to put in review for pass interference and you're not going to call it on something like that, or at least look at it like something on that, why is that even in there? You know, why did they make the rule change? But that's maybe another podcast for another day. And in non-Packers news, although both are kind of Packers related, Freddie Kitchens was let go today. Obviously, a ton of ex-Packers in that front office, whether it's Dorsey, Alonzo Highsmith, Elliot Wolf, they let their head coach go today. And then Pat Shurmur, nephew of Fritz Shurmur, that's Gilbert's guy, was fired from the New York Giants head position as well, with the Washington Redskins job already open. I believe there are currently three NFL head jobs that are open, and most folks are assuming that the head job in Dallas is going to come available, I would say sooner rather than later.
Yeah, that's what they call this, Black Monday? Is that what they call it?
Black Monday. That's right. Yep.
Monday. Wow. Well, it's the Panthers job open too, right?
Right. Yep. Yeah. You're exactly right. The Carolina job is open. This seems to be that Ron Rivera is going to head to Washington. That seems to be what's going to happen is that Snyder is going to hire Rivera, who obviously was the coach in Carolina. And so, yeah, the Panthers job is open. Dallas job, we think, is going to be open. Giants job is for sure open, and the Browns job is for sure open. We think the Redskins one is filled with Ron Rivera, but at any rate, that's sort of what the coaching carousel looks like right now. Always a rough Monday, I think. People sometimes they so desperately want their favorite team to fire the coach after a couple of down seasons or a down season. They forget that it, you know, that affects not only the coach and his family, but the entire staff and their families. And it's an ugly thing, letting coaches go and, you know, those wholesale changes that really affect people's lives in that way.
Oh, do you think our former coach is going to get one of these jobs?
It's interesting. I think McCarthy really has a shot at Carolina and at Cleveland. I don't know if he wants to get back in bed with those former Packers front office guys. I don't know that he doesn't, but I don't know that he does either. I don't really have a great understanding of the relationship there. But I like him as a fit in Carolina. I will say that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But this Cam's leaving, right? You think?
I mean, it's kind of up to them. You know, I would guess that it'll have a major influence from the head coach as well, because the decision of whether or not to bring Cam back is going to be largely up to whichever head coach, you know, signs a deal there and decides whether or not they want to build their offense around Cam Newton, or if they want to give it another shot with, you know, they took Will Greer pretty high. He looked awful yesterday. But as many rookies thrown into their first action will, and obviously they didn't have a great season, so they would have an opportunity to draft another guy if the head coach wanted to take a QB high in this year's draft. I think, if I'm not mistaken, Carolina is picking 7th, so they would have, you know, a chance to certainly go out and get whoever. You know, I think Tua might be gone. Joe Burrow's definitely going to be gone, but you know, anybody in that Herbert, Jordan Love, that kind of area, you're going to be able to take if you feel like that's what you want to do and you want to say goodbye to Cam and sort of restart, get your guy in there, have your program put into place.
Yeah, it sounds possible.
So you want to talk a little bit about, and I do too, because I think fandom is sort of what we cater to on this show. I don't think that's any surprise. We do talk about general NFL stuff, but this is a pretty targeted podcast. I mean, this podcast is for Packers fans. We can be honest about that. Mm-hmm. And you and I are both guys that grew up in an area where the folks that we cheered for were not the primary the primary team. And I look, we love our Wisconsin Packers fans. We love our Packers fans that live in Green Bay. But the Packers are a national brand. I mean, they're the first or second most popular team in the country. They kind of, them and the Steelers and the Cowboys sort of trade off those polls or that national ranking. And, you know, Green Bay is easily the smallest metro in the league. Wisconsin itself, I mean, even Milwaukee, the Brewers are considered and the Bucks are considered small market. The team can't be that popular if it's just Wisconsinites cheering for the team. So we want to talk a little bit about how people's fandoms sort of develop. And you were kind of born and raised Detroit, but you really wanted to go to the University of Minnesota, and you weren't a huge Michigan guy, a huge Lions guy growing up.
No. I mean, every kid wants to put on that Michigan helmet. Oh my God. Every kid wants to put on that Michigan helmet and play in the big house. And wow, you know, when I was growing up, man, it was just, I don't know, it was different for me. I love football, watching football, but it wasn't me being a Lions fan. You know, back then they had Billy Sims and Eric Hipple and all them type, the first number 20, Billy Sims. But to me, I was a individual football player. So my guy was Eric Dickerson. Oh my God. I'm 6'2", just 220, just big, tall, and can run that ball, you know, and whatever team he played on, that was my team. So if it was the Rams, if it was the Colts, you know, that was my team. So, I mean, you know, it's hard, you know, like I say, cheering for the Lions, you know, because you know they wasn't ever going to do just get there or do this or do that. But I felt that Eric Dickerson was a game changer. You know, he was a guy that can change the game at any moment with one run, you know, kind of in that mold of Barry Sanders, who can change the game with one run. You know what I'm saying? Type of a guy. He had over one year, he had over 2,000 yards and just his prowess and finesse. And I can remember one time, you know, we was out on the field warming up, and me and Santana was warming up, and Eric Dickerson was doing the ground commentating. I said, "Oh my God, there's Eric Dickerson right there. There he is right there. You think I can go up and take a picture or have somebody take a picture or get the Santana's?" Boy, we got a game today. We ain't got time for that. Come on, we ain't got time. And people don't realize we are fans too. You know what I'm saying? And once you see the guy that you been waiting to just stand by or touch or be around, you know what I'm saying? It's like, oh my God, you know what I'm saying? Like the first time I saw Reggie White, I was like, oh my God, you know? And it's just those things that, you know, it goes to show you, no matter how big you are, there is somebody like that for you in the game of football.
Yeah. I think a lot of guys get that way. You know, I've had, it's no secret, you know, that I was a fan before I did any of this stuff professionally. And I'll never forget the first time I went in, and this was just working for North Dakota State. Green Bay had taken, not taken, they had signed John Crockett, a running back. He was number 38 before Tremaine came back. He actually carried the ball a couple of times in the Hail Mary game in Detroit in, I think, 2016. And I had covered him in college, went out to Green Bay to interview him. And the first time I opened the door, you ever get to a doorway and you kind of do that sort of Midwest polite thing where it's like, oh, no, you go, oh, no, you, no, I'm sorry. Nope, nope. Well, I did the nope, nope dance with Jordy for about five turns. And then I finally just, you know, stood there so he could walk through the door because he was Jordy Nelson. But, you know, those kind of moments, it's like, shoot, I can't believe that even just happened. And now, you know, I've been in the locker room enough times where it's, and I've always been very, very professional. I don't think anybody would argue with that. That's been there. But the only guy that when he kind of walks by, I'm still like, geez, is Rodgers. Cause he's sort of that Hall of Famer legend, you know, and you're right. It's you start to see these guys that were, you know, you were a huge fan of, and were always these heroes that were on TV. And then you're standing 3 feet away from them and it's a completely different thing. It just is. You're absolutely right.
It's one of those things. And it's crazy because like my son would tell me, he said, what's the kid that used to quarterback for Jacksonville?
Talking about Bortles?
Yeah. Blake.
Okay.
My son would tell me, "Hey, Dad, did you know he's like your number one fan?" I'm like, "Who?" He said, "Blake Bortles." I said, "Really? A quarterback?" And it's funny how you learn that these newer guys that, you know, grow up watch you play, and they say, "Oh, you my guy, you my guy," and it's shocking, but it's humbling too, because you're like, out of all the people he can pick to be his number one guy, he picks me. I'm like, for real? Okay, I like that. Tell him, you know, I'm going to tell him thank you. You know, it's crazy, man. It's real crazy.
Yeah, and that was, you know, so like my, not famous, but my story, and I'm, you know, I've always stuck to it, is grew up in North Dakota, not even as close, you know, Fargo and Grand Forks are the two cities in North Dakota that are, you know, up above 100,000 people. They're, you know, they've got every fast food chain you can think of. They've got a mall. They've got like all the things that a city, if you will, has. And they are both on the, they're both on the, the border of Minnesota. So you can, you know, they're kind of border towns. I grew up a little bit further west, sort of inland, inland North Dakota in a small town. And so I never felt that loyalty, that need to be a Vikings fan. My dad wasn't super pushy about it. I mean, he was a Vikings fan, but he was one of those ones that had been beaten down by being a Vikings fan. And especially guys that grew up, like when he was born, I think in 54, you know, he was that perfect age, that perfect age when they were disappointing everybody to really be disappointed. You know, he was late high school, college, when they were losing all those Super Bowls. I mean, I can see where you end up getting a little bit tainted. And I just one day thought that North Dakota State was on TV because they were wearing green and yellow. I think I was 5, maybe 6 years old. And my folks explained to me that those were the Green Bay Packers. And I just kind of picked it up and went from there. And that was the story of how I guess ultimately ended up, you know, being the publisher of Packer Report. But it was sometimes tough, especially, I got to tell you, 98 when Moss got there and went 15-1. It was not a fun season to be a Packer fan living in Vikings country. But I would say that over the last 20 years, I've had the last laugh more often than not. I've been fortunate in that way.
Absolutely.
All right. Let's take a quick break here and thank our title sponsor, Stadium View Bar, Grill, and Banquet Hall. Just a fantastic job that they've done this season, helping us getting this podcast kicked off. And they got some good news, and so did you, with the Packers win yesterday, because that means there's going to be yet another Gilbert Brown's tailgate party, is there not?
We are absolutely guaranteed another opportunity to hang at Stadium View Bar and Grill, Banquet Hall. Good food, good drinks. Going to be a good game. I am predicting that the Saints will be coming to town, so we will have an awesome Sunday meeting at Stadium View Bar and Grill.
Yeah, the Saints are coming to town likely, and the way that guys works out, as we mentioned, is if Minnesota wins, they are 100% going to San Fran. That's just the way life is. They'd be the lowest seed. San Fran's the one they headed out. But the more likely occasion is that the Saints take care of business at home, and the 4-5 matchup between the Eagles and Seahawks, the Battle of the Birds, they are more than likely headed to San Fran to take on the one seed there. So that is more than likely how this whole thing is going to shake out. And guys, like we say every time, you know, and I talk about this quite a bit, it's not just the events with Gilbert and one time obviously with myself. It's every day. If you're in the Green Bay area, I don't care if you're visiting, if you live there, whatever. I mean, these guys are every day with us, special Sundays, roasted chicken and fries, $6.99. Mondays are Pasta Monday. Tuesdays are Taco Tuesdays. You can get full for about $8 there every single day of the week. And we mentioned the drink specials. My personal favorite. Who even has a drink special on a Friday? I don't know. But Stadium View does. Double Tito's vodka for $4.75. You bought about $15 and you are feeling fantastic. Stadium View does it right. I mean, they do, especially that $4 liquid brunch bar. This is not on Packer game days, but the rest of the season, $2 off pitchers of beer and $4 brunch bar, Bloody's, Mimosas, and Summer Hummers. Man, it's a great place to go and have excellent food, have a couple of beverages, and not spend $1 million.
Sounds good to me. I mean, anytime you can eat like that, and drink like that, and feel full. You know, that's the thing. Even for a big guy like myself, you know, I think that'll fill me up and have me going for the rest of the day.
Yeah, cost you about $30. All right, anyway. All right. let's break down this game because it was kind of hard to watch. I've had a chance. I watched it live. Mm. Like, talked to you last week.
Look, like I said, go ahead. Last week, can we fast forward to the second half?
Isn't that the truth? And, you know, it's funny because so many of these games have been polar opposites of each other because that was a Green Bay thing for much of the season.
Yeah.
You talk about the Chiefs game. I think Carolina, even or Oakland, they ended up stretching it out. But such a good opening script. The Packers were consistently scoring. They ran away from the Eagles and let them come all the way back and beat them. I mean, they were consistently scoring on that opening drive. They were consistently creating leads on teams. And then the last couple weeks, man, they just dead, just completely, you know, I don't know what's going on in the first half.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Why is people so hard on our tight end?
You know, people, first of all, people like to spend other people's money. That is for sure. He is the highest paid tight end in the league. And that is a tough look when, you know, we're in year two here and we're talking about 440 yards receiving and three touchdowns. That doesn't cut it. And that's, you know, the problem, like I said, with that is the fact that he is the highest paid tight end in football, getting you 440 yards. That's where I think a lot of the angst comes from, is just that they wish they would have done something else with that money. And the other thing is, too, basically the same day that they signed Jimmy Graham, mm-hmm. they released Jordy Nelson. And I don't know if there is a bigger fan favorite than Jordy.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. Mm.
And I'm not saying that keeping Jordy would have been the right move either, because obviously he's retired and he's farming in Kansas now. But the point is, that is, I'm just telling you why the anger, if you will, is there.
Okay. I didn't mean to get off script.
No, it's all right. It's all right. It's a good question, and it's a legitimate one, I think. I don't think anybody would tell you that they aren't hard on the tight end, but that was something that you know, the first, obviously, live, then I had a chance to watch the condensed version, which is the whole game with no replays, takes about 28 minutes, and was going through my third viewing after, you know, when you finally returned my damn text messages this morning. So
I can't help it if you're snowed in and I'm not. I can't help it.
Yeah, I know. So speaking of the tight end, I really thought that if he would have caught that pass, that long pass.
Remember we talk about that? The seam.
Seam. And if he catches that, I wonder if they don't kind of establish a rhythm and sort of take that game away from Detroit. Because they kicked off, they got the three and out, and if they run down the field and score, I think that thing turns out a little bit different. But anyway, they punt.
Mm-hmm.
Then after Green Bay's punt, Detroit goes down, runs the quarterback double reverse BS into the end zone, which is the same BS that Minnesota ran and missed. Yeah. So I got it. I mean, I would hope that there's something in the game plan in 2 weeks where you don't just let the quarterback run by himself. And I get it. You know, they caught him in man. And if you're not in zone and you're in man, the quarterback, unless you're spying the QB, nobody's responsibility is QB.
Yeah. Copycat.
They got twice with that deal. And I think the two things that really defined the first half offensively were overthrows and a lack of rhythm, and the quick game not being as much of a part of Green Bay's offense. We mentioned Detroit's defense being one of the worst pass defenses in the league. Specifically, and this is something that LaFleur talked about after the game, they had seen on tape that you could beat Detroit deep, and that was the place to get them, was down the field, attack the corners, attack the safeties. And so Rodgers had a career high 17 throws that went 20 yards or further. They just weren't very good throws.
Mm. Well, you know, the king, you know, he get out there and he got to give it up to Detroit, man. They came to play, you know. And then, like we said on before our podcast, that can't take these boys lightly, man. And anytime the Green Bay Packers come to town, you're going to get the best game out the best of that team. And their deal was, I mean, this is what we do on paper, but we're going to show you guys how we play some football. And they showed up and played, man. You got to take your hat off to the Detroit Lions. They showed up and played.
They did. I think it was definitely a more spirited a more spirited effort than I was anticipating, although that was something that the broadcast team certainly kept harping on, was the wins and loss record is awful, but they've had a lead. I think they had said they had a lead in like 14 games. 14 of their games at some point they were leading, which for a team that ended the season with 3 wins is that's nuts. To have blown 11 or 12 leads, that's hard to I think that's hard to swallow.
Yeah.
Certainly could mean, though, that with this high draft position that they have and year 3 of a coach's program, I think they are a candidate for maybe a nice year next year. You know, some of those things go the other way. You improve the roster a little bit. I think the Lions are probably a candidate to have, you know, maybe 7-8 wins next year instead of 3.
What pick they got?
But third, they'll pick third.
So you think they're going quarterback?
I don't think so. I'd have to look at Stafford's contract. I'm not sure. I don't know as though there's an easy way out of that for them. I think that the guy that everybody's talking about is Okuda, and if you watched the Ohio State game, that is a corner. That guy, he is tall, long, and really, really good. That's Jeff Okuda, the corner for Ohio State, number one.
Mm-hmm.
He was, and Justin Ross and T. Higgins are flat out studs from the standpoint of NFL talent. I mean, the outside receivers of Clemson are going to be first and second round picks,
mm-hmm.
flat out. And he was absolutely strapping. I mean, that was something else. So yeah, I would say the Lions could get out of Stafford's contract after 2021. They absolutely can't get out of it this year. Or, I mean, they're going to pay him 24. They're going to have $24 million against their cap to not have him there. So they need him to play in 2020, pretty much need him to play in 2021.
Mm.
But then beyond that, they could draft a QB. I don't see it. My buddy over at Pro Football Focus, Mr. Mike Renner, who kind of took over their draft coverage, he sees the same thing, Okuda at number 3. I just haven't seen a ton of steam with the Lions taking Stafford's replacement. The guy he's only 31, you know, and in this league, you have seen guys that'll play till they're 35, 36, 37. I'm not saying he's one of them, but I just think that I think they're ready to roll with Stafford until he doesn't want to be there anymore. I mean, they struggled for so long to even get a quarterback as good as he is.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they had guys that weren't at his level for a long time.
Oh, absolutely. Charlie Batch.
Yeah. that was a number of years. You're absolutely right, Charlie Batch.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, well, like I said, they could, and man, Darius Slay and Jeff Okuda on this in the same secondary. That's a head start.
That's spooky.
That's tough.
That is spooky.
Yeah, for sure. They could be something. Slay was very good. He was beat up in that game. Mm-hmm. He was very good. Defensively, they were very good in the first half.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The Packers were not. The you know, we talked about the reverse pass to the QB. We talked about that drive, but that wasn't it. I mean, they went down and scored a second time. The thing that really bothered me the most was the field goal at the end of the half. I don't know if you had a chance to see that, but Green Bay goes down. Okay, we're going to be down 14-3 at half. There's 20 seconds left. And the Lions run a draw and pick up like 45 yards and get into field goal range for Prater, who is an absolute beast. But that just can't happen.
No. No, I mean, when you see things, especially in that point of the game, man. Oh, my God. Just watch. I think that's when I turned the TV off. I was like, oh, God. Oh, turn it off. Turn it off. Let me watch Game Changers or some stupid cartoon or something. Maybe I can keep my spirits up.
So talk to me a little bit about that locker room conversation. Obviously, you weren't in there, but during your time, there had to have been, you know, these two scenarios, right? So either you're losing at halftime to a team you have no business losing to, or you're losing to a team at halftime that has way less to play for than you do. And that Matt LaFleur basically said, like, we treated this as a playoff game because if we win this game, we advance a round. You know, they get automatically to the round of eight. And to me, it just didn't look like they were playing at that level. What do you think that talk was like? What do you think that discussion was?
Well, you know, first of all, you know, you it depends on, you know, what stadium you're in. You're going in the locker room and you waiting for the guys to come in that's been upstairs watching the whole game, even though, you know, if it's not your position coach or somebody else. And the adjustments are key. You know, as soon as you walk in the locker room, everybody's yelling, everybody's da 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 da. Then head coach speaks, and everybody shuts up. Okay, and then after the head coach speaks, then the guys come in and they start making their adjustments and getting their groups together, or as a defense or whatever. You know, Fritz was great at that, man. I mean, just all right. This is what we need to do. Da 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 da. You know what I'm saying? And that point, it's kind of like, you're in a boxing match and you've been getting your ass kicked for the first three or four rounds. And then he sits you down and he says, okay, listen to me. This is the way we got to beat this guy. And they break it down for you. And they're giving you confidence in what you're supposed to do. A great coach will do that, not come in the locker room and tear you down on all the bad things you've been doing, because all that is over with. A great coach is going to come in there, tell you your adjustments, pump you up, get you ready for the second half. And then you got to sit there and you got to believe what he's telling you. You can't just sit up and say, I know I can do this and go up the field and do this and make the sack. No, you got to listen to me. You got to be patient and do it my way and we're going to win. And that's what they believed in the second half, is because the things that they were doing in the first half was not working. So when the adjustments come in, which we are a great adjustment team, we came back out in the second half and we handled business.
And that's exactly the next thing that I want to ask you about. What do you feel like adjustments were made? What did they do differently in the second half that they weren't doing in the first half? And I will point out, I think it's a big deal that Golladay didn't play, because Golladay was giving 23 fits.
Yeah. You know what, man? It's on both sides of the ball. You know, I mean, the passes, the routes, you know, because in these big type games, and I'm not saying young guys are you know, scared, but there's nervousness that goes on, you know, especially with the young guys and with these young receivers we have. And I'm pretty sure Aaron Rodgers went to each one individual and said, hey, man, this is what I need from you. This is what I need from you. This is what I need from you. And for him to go into a young guy and telling them that builds their confidence up, builds them up to do the right routes and not cut them off or turning something up too soon. You know what I'm saying? Defensively, you know, we got to get more pressure on this quarterback. We got to be more disciplined in our lanes so we can stop all this baby crap that we're doing, slow this run game now. And I'm pretty sure somebody went to Kenny Clark and said, hey, man, you got to shore up that middle a little bit better than what you're doing, man. You know, and it's not criticism. It's a team thing where guys are going to each other and say, hey, man, this is what we need to win the game. And if you're not a selfish player, if you're a guy that really loves his craft, he's going to listen and he's going to go out and he's going to perform.
Yeah, that was one thing. I mean, you could tell from, and obviously, like, yeah, you know, it's real easy for me to talk all this mess from my couch. I get it, guys. I do. But you could tell the two things that Detroit wanted to do. Three things, really. One was run the ball right up the middle. And Green Bay was going to play nickel or dime all day, especially after Goodson got hurt. After B.J. Goodson gets hurt, they apparently are not comfortable playing Ty Summers at linebacker because Ibrahim Campbell came in. All of a sudden, you go from five defensive backs to six. Mm-hmm. You got a problem stopping the run because they were running the ball right up the middle. What's the second thing they wanted to do? Get the ball out of Bluff's hands. They knew that they could not block 55 or, frankly, probably 97 and 91. But they knew that they could not block Green Bay up front. So get the ball out of his hands.
Mm-hmm.
The third thing they wanted to do were take deep shots to Galladay.
Mm-hmm.
That worked great. But when he gets out, now their offense is really down to just the two things, running the ball up the middle
mm-hmm.
and short passes. And I just didn't feel like the adjustment was made until the second half to deal with some of that stuff. And I get it, personnel, you're down one, you know, the other linebacker that you like to use. But I just didn't feel like the adjustments were made until that second half. And that, hey, 3 points and a half, that's great. And I don't care who the quarterback is, what the situation is. The defense played well enough in the second half to win the game. And that is flat out what happened. We talked, you know, earlier in the game or early in the week when we were doing the preview about David Blough. I keep saying Bluff, but I think it's Blough. I was listening to the call and I would assume it's Blough. So I guess I'll apologize for that. But he did throw them a few. Obviously the one to Martinez was damn near comical. I mean, that was as bad of an interception as you'll see. And then he threw Tremont one too, the hit old boy in the face mask, unfortunately. But that would have been a game changer as well. He's not quite ready for prime time, David Blough.
No, he needs to be polished a little bit. He has signs of being good, but in certain situations and certain pressures, you can see his happy feet. You know, it's hard for him to set his feet because he's worried about his surroundings. So, but I mean, I think he's going to be okay quarterback later on down the road, but not right now.
Mm-mm. Yeah, you saw that. I think one of the big things with those guys is like, is he terrified? And I thought, no, you know, I didn't think he was scared the entire time. And that's a big deal, but you can't throw it 29 times and get 122 yards. That can't happen.
Right.
Just kind of a rough day. And then Rodgers finally, I thought he was a completely different quarterback in the second half.
Yes.
And yeah, he threw it 55 times. But ended up with 323 yards, two touchdowns, threw a pick that basically ended up being a punt. A better throw is probably either a game-winning touchdown or sets up a game-winning field goal, and that's, of course, not what happened. But ultimately what I'm saying is the interception was not a great play. It just didn't cost them anything. You know, if that falls incomplete, 44 yards was gained by Green Bay on that interception.
It was a great
It
was a great play though. You got to give it to that Lions for who was that? Do we remember?
Oh, that was my guy. Amani Oruwariye, who is a corner from Penn State that I loved coming out, and for whatever godforsaken reason, I think lasted until like round five or six, but that's my guy. Wow. I was
great athleticism, man. I mean,
he's long, man. And
jump ball.
Yeah, he's good. You know, Rodgers throws that another 6 yards.
Touchdown. I mean, at least completed pass. He just out jumped.
But ultimately, you know, like we said, they probably would have punted it about 44 yards on the very next play. So what the hell's the difference? A better throw is a completion.
Just four interceptions.
But ultimately.
Just four interceptions.
Yeah. And so, you know, Davante Adams gets involved heavily. Lazard just keeps making plays, man. That guy, a lot of people talk about the Packers skill position and, mm-hmm. And not having, mm-hmm. not having the group that they need to really truly be great and who needs to get replaced, who doesn't need to get replaced. Mm-hmm. I got to tell you, Lazard is a keeper.
Oh, yeah.
That's a guy that needs to be part of the long-term plan for sure. Mm-hmm. And then we get to your and I's favorite play from the game, which was Aaron Rodgers' matrix throw to Aaron Jones to set up that 31-yard screen pass that ultimately won the game.
You know what, man? I sit there and I you have flashbacks of things. You know, if us standing on the sideline watching our offense do, and I swear I saw Brett Favre and Dorsey Levins on that play. I swear I did. Just the way Brett was in trouble and Dorsey found a way to get open. He threw him the ball and there you go. You know, and then you turn it to fast forward to this year. Aaron Rodgers and Jones. Oh my God. I was just like, flashback? What? Wow. Awesome play. I mean, just that shows you the kind of true grit that both of them guys have to try to make something happen. And Aaron Jones took it even further to get to where he needed to be.
And true grit, I don't think could possibly define anything more than it defined Mason Crosby's year. Just an unbelievable season for them. Mm-hmm. As most yeah. folks that listen to this podcast know, mm-hmm. that the Crosby family suffered a loss due to cancer. Mm-hmm. I believe it was Mason's brother's wife that passed on this year. Last year, football adversity, which obviously there's no comparison, it's not what I'm saying, but mm-hmm. football adversity in Detroit, missing kicks absolutely left and right, mm-hmm. even missed a kick in this game, mm-hmm. and then goes down, completes, I think, the best, if not probably Justin Tucker, but beyond Justin Tucker, I think Crosby had the best season of any kicker in the league. And bangs through a game winner as time expires. Like LaFleur said, it was a playoff kick because if Crosby doesn't make that kick and they lose in overtime, they have to play next week. And instead, they advance around. That kick advanced them around in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. There's no other way to see it. And man, just what an incredible story for Mason this year. And so happy for him.
Yeah, you got to take your hat off to him, man. I mean, I don't per se like kickers, you know,
because I believe it.
I think they're just like, you know, we out there sweating and fussing and fighting and they over there sitting around laughing and joking until it's their turn to do things. But when it comes down to it, man, and they finally get to do their job, it's spectacular because it's so much pressure on them to either win the game or get the points so we can keep going or doing the, so, you know, that to me, there's the quarterback position when it comes to pressure and it's the kicker's position when it comes to pressure. If you don't got the right guy, they're going to crack. We got the right guy, Mason Crosby.
Yeah. You might not like kickers, but when it comes down to it, you'd certainly rather have a good one than a bad one.
Yes, absolutely. We've been fortunate to have some good ones over the years, but Mason Crosby to me is one of the best.
All right. Well, we're going to have to come up with some content stuff for you guys coming. We're going to have probably two shows in between this one and the preview show for the divisional round. So we've got to, I'm guessing we're going to do an Ask Gilbert show.
And then I love that.
Yeah, I think we're going to do an Ask Gilbert show, and then I think we'll probably end up maybe with a pop culture show. Maybe we'll talk about the new Star Wars that seems to have people in two very different camps.
Oh, yeah.
Either love it or hate it. I don't know. We'll come up with something for you guys, though. We promise we're gonna keep it rocking here. Gilbert, I want to thank you for your time, buddy. As always, folks, I want to really thank you for listening and just let you know that there are two main ways that you can support this show. The number one and the easiest one, certainly, is to head over to whichever podcast service you listen to this show on and give us a 5-star review. leave us a written review, and certainly subscribe. Tell 10 friends to subscribe or start easy. Tell 5. We just want as many people as possible to listen to this show because we think we're doing an all right job. The second way is to become a VIP member over at Packer Report right now. We're doing the first month for $1, so you can check out our premium content, see if it's worth your time. And if you are in now or you're in after that month, 30% off of an annual subscription. We're going to take you all the way through next season. Thanks, everybody, one more time, and go Pack, go.